Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Three martinis for conservatives today. One is definitely bad. One is definitely crazy. And we'll let you decide what the first one is. Jim, you just posted this not long ago on the campaign spot, found at nationalreview.com, of course. And it's a note from Jeb Bush. And like most people's holiday notes to their supporters, they talk about how they spent the Thanksgiving holiday discussing the future of America with their family. I'm sure that's what you did with your family at Thanksgiving. But here's the paragraph that I think a lot of people were expecting to see. We also talked about the future of our nation. As a result of these conversations and thoughtful consideration of the kind of strong leadership I think America needs, I have decided to actively explore the possibility of running for president of the United States. And obviously this brings in a whole lot of issues. Is there Bush fatigue? All the dynasty talk. On the other hand, he had a pretty strong record as governor of Florida that a lot of conservatives liked for 8 years. On the flip side, his two biggest issues now are a pathway to citizenship for illegal immigrants and Common Core, which are clearly not going to be very popular on the campaign trail. And so his best option would probably be to secure the moderate to mildly conservative parts of the party if he does decide to run. So, Jim, he's going to be a flashpoint if he gets in this thing.
He is. Automatically goes to the top tier, both in terms of money, in terms of name ID, in terms of connections with other folks in the Republican Party, being from a key state. I think there are a lot of listeners who are going to say this is a very bad martini. There are a lot of listeners who are going to say this is a very good martini. You touched on both of them. There's a part of him that says, you know what? Let's see what he's got to say. Let's give him a shot. We'll see what kind of how he addresses some of those positions like Common Core and a path to citizenship. The thing that kind of nags at me, and I wrote about this yesterday, and I kind of wonder how he'll address this. In the past 2 decades, the Bush family and the Clinton family have become very close. They've done a lot of charitable work together. They've done a lot of fundraising for good causes, spending time with each other socially. And George W. Bush has jokingly referred to Bill Clinton as his brother from another mother. And he said Hillary is his metaphorical sister-in-law. Well, what does that make Jeb, Greg?
The other brother-in-law.
Extending the metaphor, he's Hillary's brother-in-law, too. Now, we would find it really weird if it was a literal brother-in-law running for president. There's two problems here. First of all, I think it kind of adds to this sense that American politics is dominated by a few powerful families, and they're all buddies with each other, and it's basically the elites versus everybody else. And then the second kind of aspect is that, look, the conservative base really doesn't like Hillary Clinton. With good reason. I mean, you can cite Benghazi, you can cite the reset button. If you're a conservative, you believe that the Democratic Party's policies are pushing the country into a worse direction. They are making America worse. It's not just that it's not working. It's not just that it's keeping us in neutral. They are hurting America. So I hope Jeb Bush can bring it if he ends up being the general election candidate. Okay, we can't pull any punches in this one. All right, we don't want to hear anybody say, well, she means well. After all, she's almost my sister-in-law. Ha ha. No, she's terrible. I hope that Jeb Bush can come out and make that case, because the Republican nominee has to do that.
And it also affects probably the decisions of other people who are considering this race. You lead off the Morning Jolt today with Marco Rubio recruiting donors for a confab down in Florida in the later part of January to make his decision. And then, of course, you've got Mitt Romney. It's hard to imagine both Romney and Bush getting in. It's hard to imagine both Bush and Rubio getting in.
Much like the NCAA tournament, we're going to need a couple play-in rounds. And so really, like, it's the establishment bracket is going to be potentially Romney, potentially Bush. I mean, Bush, obviously, potentially Christie. And really interesting, for a while there, Rubio was saying, if Jeb ran, he's kind of my political mentor, it would be really tough to run against him. I think he's going to get over it. I think he's like, okay, I guess I can do that after all. Not so hard. Now, they may not be nasty to each other in the primaries, but it'll be kind of interesting. Now, also, it'll be interesting to see Rubio and Bush kind of competing for that same donor base and supporters in Florida. As one person pointed out, it's not just that Bush and Rubio are from the same state. They're from the same county. they're both Miami guys. So it'll be kind of interesting to see what kind of dynamic they have in that primary. But I guess 2016 is on us, Greg. It started. Yay.
Jim, you've got me really thinking with this bracketology, NCAA style. What would be better for a long campaign season than to inject Dick Vitale into the process?
Oh, there's something, you know, Rubio looks like a diaper dandy. I'll spare you the full Dick Vitale impression. But yeah, that's what we could go. And it also would kind of be nice like to rotate, you know, since we're going to have, it looks like, 24 candidates or some unbelievable amount, then maybe at the very least, you know, for the debates, like they have different rounds, you get to actually face off against each other.
All right. On to the bad martini. If you thought yesterday's bad martini was bad, and it was, with the terrorist situation at the cafe in Sydney, what happened today in Peshawar, Pakistan, just takes it to a new level. Here's what happened. At least 5 militants entered a school in Peshawar in northwest Pakistan wearing security uniforms and massacred 126 people, at least, mainly children, on Tuesday. The Pakistani army official said hundreds of students were evacuated, but it's not yet clear how many are still in the building. It's believed the Taliban targeted the school to demoralize the military because many of the soldiers and officers fighting the Taliban have their children in this school. So it's an attempt to demoralize the military. There's also reports that this was a revenge against the Nobel Peace Prize being awarded to Malala Yousafzai. And this is a school, apparently, that's very supportive of her efforts to make sure that girls get an education along with the boys. So, Jim, on every conceivable level, a despicable act this morning.
Yeah, it's horrible. And let me observe, like, the fact that the Taliban did this, I think, cannot be separated from the fact that, remember, this is the same Taliban we just did a prisoner swap with, Greg.
Mm.
Right. We just gave them 5 of their guys in exchange for Bo Bergdahl. And this administration has actively supported and called for, you know, and has been negotiating with the Taliban for quite some time. Well, as far as I don't want to see the United States negotiating with people who massacre children. I'm sorry. You start doing that, you're all, we don't sit across the table from you. We turn over the table onto you. This was a bad policy from the start. We knew we could never trust these guys. They are cutthroat, bloodthirsty killers. And, you know, back in 2012, Greg, remember who said we shouldn't do it? Mitt Romney, and everybody said he was crazy. All the foreign policy establishment, all the columnists, the Obama administration, all their friends said, no, it's a sign of strength to reach out to all that bull crud. And Lord knows I wanted to use other words than that. So I hope all those people are happy. I hope they look at this in Pakistan and realize what they have been advocating for years is to find some sort of sensible agreement with the kind of guys who will massacre children, which is an abominable act, exacerbated by bad, bad policy on our part.
Jim, on to the crazy martini now. And as many people noted, I don't know if we specifically made this a crazy martini, but different law schools, starting with Columbia, and then there were efforts made by students, law students at other law schools around the country, particularly in the Northeast, to delay final exams because they were so distraught over the grand jury decisions not to indict police officers in Ferguson, Missouri, and in Staten Island, the Michael Brown and Eric Garner cases. Now we've got the rebuttal. This is written for the National Journal by William Desmond, a third-year student at Harvard Law School and an editor on the Harvard Law Review. It obviously is too long to read in its entirety, but basically he's responding to the criticism that, hey, if you're going to be a lawyer, you got to be able to deal in stressful, high-pressure situations, and not being able to take your exams just because you don't like what's going on in the world right now doesn't suggest you're ready for the courtroom anytime soon. He says, quote, "Speaking as one of those law students, I can say that this response is misguided. Our request for exam extensions is not being made from a position of weakness, but rather from one of strength and critical awareness. Although over the last few weeks, many students have experienced moments of total despair, minutes of inconsolable tears, and hours of utter confusion, many of these same students have also spent days in action, days of protesting, of organizing meetings, drafting emails and letters, and of starting conversations long overdue. We have been synthesizing decades of police interactions, dissecting problems centuries old, and exposing the hypocrisy of silence. I have seen the psychological trauma brought on by disillusionment with our justice system and sent some law students into a period of depression." So, Jim, I'm sure some students have been deeply affected here, but the idea that these law students are the ones across the board who are so distraught by this that they have to have an extension seems to be, kind of what we'd expect, unfortunately, from the college students of this generation.
As someone who has tried to avoid work with a wide variety of implausible excuses in the past, I kind of salute the effort there. I kind of, you know, honey, I can't take out the trash. I'm so upset about the spate of police violence against citizens. Having said that, look, if you really are apoplectic with despair and incapable of doing anything for hours on end because of bad news, you have to stop watching the news. Life is always going to have something terrible going on somewhere in the world. We talked about it in our second awful martini today. The idea that, well, because of this, I can't take my exams. Look, you know, life is going to throw days, you know, going to have bad days in which you're going to have to deal with news you don't like. And, you know, if you really want to go out and make a difference, then go out, take your exam, succeed, be a lawyer, and then go help help these communities. Do pro bono work. You know, the idea that, you know, the only option for me to respond to this is to just lay my head down and not get out of bed in the morning. Sorry, you know, whiny millennial, you're living up exactly to the stereotype of the whiny millennial. By the way, earlier this morning, Greg, somebody had lamented that we need a better term for them than millennials. And I believe it was our Joel Gerke who suggested rookies.
What do you do when they're 60 years old, though?
Aging rookies.
They're not off to a great start, although they think they are. Jim, we'll stop there for today and pick it up tomorrow. Talk to you then.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.